Royal Barbados Police Force Special Branch.
That's like two guys sitting in an office.
Well, they're the ones frantically ignoring all the tax evasion,
aren't they? Yeah. Quick. The legal paperwork is finally up. Burn it, burn it.
Hello, and welcome to the Poorly Informed Podcast. I'm your host this week, Max, and I'm here with Theo, Peter, and Will. This week, we're going to be talking about space travel, whether we should pursue space travel / colonize other planets in order to try and solve all our problems. So, I think that's it. Let's start. Theo, what do you think?
I'm not really sure. I think...
Nice.
I can see the benefits, but I'm also concerned, like, how... I think people don't understand how massive a philosophical and moral change it would be living on another planet. I'm concerned as to what sort of society we could become.
What kind of moral change?
So, so the West believes in democracy, a lot of Asia doesn't. If China leads a mission, they then implement autocratic style. If America and China are on the same planet and Mars and their society gets big enough, do you have democracy style government? Do you have one person style government? Do you project your leadership values or do you make it new? How do you change the structure of your society? How do you decide who's in charge? Like, questions that scientists don't really think about, but which need to be considered.
Okay, right. Peter, what do you think?
Well, space is awesome. However, despite space being very cool and rockets being awesome, I think that colonization is frankly a bit stupid, at least for the short to medium term. Like, any future that we will live into, I think is unreasonable.
Okay, cool. What about you, Will?
Well, personally, I am massively in favour of space flight. I think that by pursuing the advancement of science, technology, and human space flight, we get so many net benefits for not only just directly things directly related to space flight, but also across society as a whole. And I think it's definitely a worthwhile thing to spend money on. And yes, it is very expensive, but I still think at the end of the day, it is a net benefit for society as a whole.
We seem to actually, for once, have someone who has each of the opinion viewpoints on this, which is odd.
What's yours?
I'm very for it.
Okay.
So, yeah, in terms of the problems, because the main part of this question is, would it solve all our problems, and should we pursue that over another problem, over another solution? So I'd say, problem-wise, what problems are we going to face in the future that space travel would or would not solve?
I think one of the main ones that people often look to in sort of the long-term future, so this is not thinking about today, it's just thinking about sort of 500 years' time, is overpopulation, because Earth has a limited amount of resources. They aren't going to last forever, and at some point we are probably going to have to expand outwards to find new resources, find new ways of sort of supporting the population, and most people think that at some point we're going to have to go somewhere because we will have used up Earth, as it were. And I think there is a lot of validity to this. I think it doesn't necessarily apply right now, but it's something we do have to consider. And I think it is a problem that in many ways can only be solved by space flight in the long term. There's very few other ways that you solve this problem, because we can't create sort of resources that we're using up, like the metal in phones. It's very, very difficult to get that back, for instance. That would be incredibly expensive. So actually, it might be better for society as a whole to go and find somewhere new, mine asteroids, things like that, to be able to support a larger population.
And Will,
in the long
do you keep expanding out every time we run out? So what is it? What's the is it silicon we have in our phones? What's the
silicon for computer chips? Yeah, it's one.
So say you run out of silicon, you find more. I'm no science, metals, anything expert.
So, I mean, silicon's often made of sort of a sand, so I don't know if
a metal. Say you run out of a metal.
Let's say we run out of copper.
It's a prescient problem. Copper, you know, people do keep an eye on how much copper you've got. We don't, but people do. Say we run out of copper, we go to an asteroid, we mine copper. We do nice out of the copper. But that amount of copper is in no way going to match the Earth's current stock of copper. So that's going to run out within a few lifetimes.
However,
Do you then keep jumping onto more asteroids and comets and planets and keep mining? Do you keep expanding outwards?
I think that's the only inevitable.
Because there's this thing called the asteroid belt.
Ooh.
That has quite a few asteroids in it. So this is from my very quick research. So the sort of targets that NASA has for asteroids that they would go to get resources from, the first one, which is called Ryugu or something, the estimated value of the metals on it, so it's got nickel, iron, cobalt, it's also got water, and then nitrogen, ammonia, hydrogen and stuff, is estimated to have a value of $95 billion in all of that stuff. And so let's say that's obviously an outlier at the top, but you have all of these asteroids in the asteroid belt that have such an immense value of resources that all of that together, or even a small section of that together, would be worth way more, or not worth way more, but would be a lot more than is on Earth. So that would solve. So it's not like we just go somewhere else, use it up instantly, and then have the same problem of trying to overcome such a massive obstacle. In space, there's almost limitless resources, if you think about it, how big everything is.
That's a fair point.
Oh, can I take it back to an earlier point about overpopulation?
Sure.
Like, no, because you just said research on it, and I don't want you to prove
no,
well.
Like,
I'm an impartial host here.
You know, no, we're going to run out of space on the Earth. We're not really, though. So Earth's population isn't expected to constantly just be a linear increase.
No, it is decreasing.
No one says that. It's expected to, like,
As societies develop,
it's expected to, like, bottom out at 12 billion, I think.
Yeah, that's still quite a few, though.
12 billion people can fit in a very surprisingly small amount of space. The amount of space we don't use on Earth, with improvements in efficiency in the 500 years that will take place, like in terms of farming, in terms of housing, in terms of transportation, the amount of space we need to support the people is easily viable to have on Earth.
But then wouldn't that create like mega cities?
Yes.
Which surely I think mega cities
are
bad.
Not many more mega cities.
I mean, the problem is we use a lot of that space, as you say, for farming, transportation,
okay,
and mining.
So, yeah.
And people, 12 billion people are still going to want to be able to go to the beach or the natural parks.
And it's going
to
be a lot more food needed for those.
Most farming is done for, like, cows. We don't need to eat cows.
That's fair enough.
Lab-grown meat, stuff like that, that'll clear up 3/4 of the agricultural land we have.
Okay.
That 3/4 is going to easily support an extra 5 billion people with wheat and staple foods.
What about the water needed? Because according to, I think it's National Geographic, the amount of food needed to feed people within, I think it's by 2050, we need to double the amount of food we produce.
Theo has a statistic. So the human population density of the Earth, not including Antarctica, and I clicked on the photo and I've lost it. The human density of the Earth, not including Antarctica, including deserts, the Arctic, mountains, rainforest, is 55 people per square kilometre. That is quite a lot of people per square kilometre.
And is that at the moment?
That's at the moment. Okay, it's not load, but it's a moderate amount of people.
And if you say almost double it,
Excluding that, I think that's not including the seas, by the way, this is just land. And then if you exclude all areas that can't be effectively built on, so deserts and mountains
and with
rainforest.
Rising sea levels, there's going to be less land anyway.
Stop doing mongering. and also including areas such as beaches, parks, recreation, leisure facilities. This is getting a bit dense.
Just like pizza.
I don't agree with that, because in many ways, the environmental impact of that many more people, even if we do make farming that much more efficient. I mean, what happens when that many people need to heat their homes or that much more plastic that they'll use? These kind of things, like another doubling of our current population or even just adding 50% to it, is going to be exponentially worse for the environment. And how much further can we afford to push the environment before something catastrophic happens or is happening already potentially?
Because Will makes a good point, I'm going to ignore it and ask, what do people think the population density of England is?
It's not. It's about 2%, isn't it?
But probably like people per square kilometre.
It's really low.
It's 400 people per square kilometre.
What's the population density of India?
Wait, hold on. 400 people per square kilometre?
400 people per square kilometre.
That's really quite high. Yeah.
So, and the current world is 55 people per square kilometre? I think we can easily afford to double that.
Are you sure?
Yes, I am. Here you go. As you can see, I am correct as always.
That's the Telegraph. So what they did is they published this to say that we don't need immigrants because we're really crowded. And this is in 2008.
So probably
right, go back, find some better statistics.
Okay, well, so, okay, let's just say that. But in this scenario where we do have 55 people per square... Actually, that's at the moment. Say 100 people per square kilometre. that's not... Well, yeah, so you've got to do, as Theo said, take out deserts, take out rainforests, take out mountains, take out the Siberian tundra, take out...
But with improvements in technology in these 500 years that Will suggested, surely we could make these places habitable.
But at what cost?
At what cost? I mean,
so the the UK is actually 272 person per square kilometre, so much less than what you said.
No, but I said England is what I said because it made me look better, which is 427.
So if you factor in the Scottish Highlands, basically...
But that still doesn't make a difference. Cause
do you know how difficult it would be to live like at the top of Ben Nevis?
I'm not saying that, but there's lots of empty plains. There's lots of space we can live. We can make things more efficient. Farming can be made more.
How many houses can you fit into a square kilometre?
So it depends what standard of living people could have.
Yeah.
So could live are we talking about efficiency apartments?
Yes.
Are we talking about houses with a back garden and a nice patch of grass out front you can put a tree in? No.
I would say the way England is, there's enough grass, there's enough like outdoor places and enough industrial places and urban places that everyone's happy.
But we have to import food, and that food takes up space elsewhere.
But not everyone would be this dense. Hardly anywhere would be this dense. And farming would be more efficient, is what I'm saying.
This dense is
would
not
have better ways of creating. We'll mention materials to run out of gold and stuff and reduce too much plastic. We'd find better materials. We don't need to just export our problems to another country. Because. Or another planet. We don't need to do this if we can.
So
the earth will be fine.
Okay, so let's say in this wonderful fancy land that you've got, Peter, where we can grow enough food to feed everyone and we have enough water and everyone likes living in a Mumbai slum.
We don't live in a Mumbai slum.
Yeah, but we don't live in central London. Like,
we are exporting our problems.
Hear that,
yeah,
central London? You're a Mumbai slum.
No, that's not, I meant as in population density. And if you've got a problem where, if you've got a situation where you have so many more people, you won't be able to have a nice house. Won't be able to have all of that. You'll be living in either a tower block, which some people don't want to live in a tower block, Peter.
We also currently waste 30% of our food.
So that is quite, yeah.
Waste that food. We can become better at using the resources we have.
And there's a lot of space in Africa and Asia where their farming is vastly inefficient.
But I think these are often things that are so... I hate to say more difficult than space flight, but can you... Put it this way, a concerted effort by world governments to clear up food wastage
has been going on for a while.
Yeah, but
the government's still trying to... Okay, the EU, at least, is trying to stop food waste. Has it really worked? Okay, it's probably brought it down a few percent, but it hasn't brought it down to zero, which is what we'd need in this scenario with a massive population. Okay, and what I was saying before is, if all of these problems do go away, what are you going to do about power? If you have however many people per square kilometre, you won't be able to have, say, a nuclear power plant that can't be in the middle of a city. Yes?
Well, I'm going to say for this one, I don't think power's too much of an issue with a mixture of renewables and large amounts of nuclear power, because nuclear power doesn't have to be that close to the population.
I'd like to say this.
Yeah, I'll admit, it was a weak point.
I've clearly won this argument.
Okay, yeah. At 20, let's just... I've done some math, but I think there might be one or two too many zeros in it. So 12 billion divided by 150 million square kilometres, which Wikipedia tells me is the surface space of the Earth. Is that Earth? Does that sound about right?
Sure, why not?
Yeah.
That's coming out as 80 people per square kilometre.
Okay.
Which is not actually terrible. So apparently that's less than England at the moment.
That's factoring in
Birmingham and London.
It's a fifth of England.
So that's like we said, that's not actually too bad. I don't know what the local statistics are for where we live. So that means redistributing everyone across, including the Sahara, including the Gobi, including the Amazon, including the Himalayas and the Andes. So I don't know what it would be if we remove all of those areas of contention.
But
that's
also
just your information.
So long as population growth is positive, which it probably would be, the population will keep rising. So eventually we will need more land.
No,
and eventually something will happen, like pollution, whatever will happen, to make Earth less hospitable. It's where going to a different planet is a good idea.
And also with climate change, we're currently potentially looking at over 2 degrees of change with the way we're going, which would be a climate disaster, especially in sort of places like the Middle East, which are already bordering sort of too hot to live in some places. deserts expanding, resource wars. I mean, the potential for a stable population without some kind of one world government that organises everything perfectly efficiently to be that high is very, very low.
So what you're all suggesting is the government spend billions shipping people off to different planets.
Yes.
Instead of spending billions fixing our own planets.
Yes, I forgot what my point of view was.
You were kind of in the middle.
Oh yeah, that's it.
No, because sending people off to other planets, there's a profit incentive there. Because there are resources there, there's more money in finding an area that's 1 billion square kilometres and making it inhabitable, as opposed to making this many people waste less food. So companies are more likely to want to promote space travel and want to go into space if they can make money out of it, as opposed to stop throwing away your slightly mouldy bread.
Out of interest, do you know how close the nearest Earth-like planet is?
It's pretty far, I'll give you that.
Do you want to know how many light years that is?
How many light years away?
It's 12 light years away. That doesn't sound so bad. Do you want to know what fraction of the speed of light we travel at?
What?
We travel at 1.3% of the speed of light. So this is a 900-year trip.
That sounds quite high. In fact, that sounds very high.
Our top speed in space flight
is
ever recorded.
Yeah, but that's...
No,
that's
man.
Not man.
It's
man.
Well,
it's 40,000 kilometres an hour.
Right.
Which is 1.3% of the speed of light.
Okay.
Which is a 900 years trip to the nearest Earth-like planet.
That's a nice statistic, Peter. That reminds me of a question I have, and you guys sound intelligent.
Before you ask
this
question, I just want to ask Peter something. So, in this scenario, you say there's not allowed to be any technological advancement in space travel, but there can be technological advancement in food that we can grow at all.
I would say, unless you get to an appreciable fraction of the speed of light, there's no profit incentive for something that will take 200 years, 100 years there, 100 years back. There's no profit incentive there, because no one's going to be alive in 200 years to care about the money.
What about Mars? We could go to Mars, we could build biodinosaurs on
Mars. Why would you want to live in Mars? It's just
can I have my question? Right, I'm so really ignored by the host. Terrible hosting. I'm going to go on the iTunes and leave a really bad review. What I was going to ask is, so is space a complete or partial vacuum? Are there air particles in space at all?
It's a partial
vacuum.
Well,
but
if you're going on a 900-year journey, doesn't that add up? So doesn't that add up in terms of fuel costs?
Sort of, but there are there's things like solar sails which have been tested at the moment, which are really interesting. Where essentially, they sort of catch like a solar wind, as it were, of radiation. And use that to propel them to ridiculously high speeds because there's no drag. And the way that works is, remember back to our physics lessons all those years ago, if you're pushing something forwards and you're not pushing anything back, you're going to get constant acceleration. So you're not just going to get a set speed, you're going to be going faster and faster and faster. So it is actually possible to get up to much, much higher speeds, potentially, without the use of magic things like ion, whatever, Star Wars kind of things you think about. But the technology is very expensive at the moment, and a lot of it's hypothetical. But I mean, like 60 years ago, we were just sort of thinking about, oh, actually, could we get to the moon? Now that's something we've been there, we've done that. We found out this was possible, and we've done it.
Yeah.
So I think with future technologies, it's definitely possible, I think, that we see enough of an improvement with a concerted effort that we can get, we're not going to achieve fast and light travel, I don't think, but we can get somewhere where we are advanced enough that it doesn't matter and we can sustain ourselves for 900 years if need be.
Shut up, Peter. When did we stop using horses? Like, that was what, around 1910-ish, let's say, widespread? We don't use
horses. Population peaked in 1915.
Let's say 1915 is the year where we stopped using horses as primary, like, travel thing. How long, like, 50, 60 years later, we were on the moon. What do you think, and technological advancement keeps speeding up, what do you think we're going to be next?
Okay, we're not ever going to get past a certain fraction of the speed of light.
No, probably not, but we will be able to get to the other places. We can build, like, generations.
I would say the best we can hope for is a fifth of the speed of light.
Okay.
Which is still over 100-year round trip to the nearest Earth-like planet, which still makes there be zero profit incentive.
This is where I'd say is because I'm not...
For colonisers, at least.
No, because you had the pilgrims who left England to go to
America.
They could
still... Well, that was like a couple months
couple,
trip.
Yeah, it was a couple
and
months trip. However,
they could go back.
They didn't intend to just keep going back and forth.
They
went there to create a new... To, you know, find a new home and whatever. So sure, some people would want to do that. I'd want to go and move and live on a different planet if I could.
This brings me to my new point. Okay, so you're saying, cool, amazing, let's go to the planet. I finally have something intelligent to contribute to this discussion. Okay, you guys have been slumming it far too long. Basically, so you let's say, ignoring Peter's slightly woeful protest at this point, let's say 500 people of varying nationalities have landed, and ethnicities and backgrounds have landed on this planet. Let's say it's Mars, so it's within a lifetime trip. They intend to stay. They've set up a base, they've got the artificial gravity, that's fine. Everything scientifically A-OK, lockdown, yes, whatever positive exclamations you want to make. So now you get to the point where they are having children, they are getting together and making families, if they choose to, if that's how it's going to work. Now you get to the point, how is this society run? How is human expansion going to continue on Mars? Okay, because so much of who humans are is shaped by the fact that we're on a planet with significant oceans, so exploration is a big part of who we are. We've got mountain ranges, we've got forests. Mars is a barren desert with some big mountains.
It's essentially very big mountains.
Very big mountains. Olympus Mons, biggest mountain in the solar system. But then you get into the philosophical mechanics of society, which are really complex, which we can hope to understand. But so how do you raise children in that environment? What education do you give them? How do you establish a system of government and leadership? How do you choose where to put new colonies and how they interact with each other? How do you develop trade systems?
I'd say we've already done this. We've been there, and this is one of the most human experiences of all. I mean, we colonised the New World, to think of sort of a more recent example, as it were. It's still very old, but we have examples of humans throughout history going out into new places. These things often fail, they often go horribly wrong, and then sometimes they go right, and sometimes you get the United States appearing.
Well, I can understand that, but they're in the same, to their knowledge, they're in the same climate. Okay, so they know the temperature is never going to vary between minus 40 and plus 40. Okay, they're going to stay in the same range. They've got rain, so they know they can rely on rain, hail, snow, sun. They know they can breathe the air. They know that there are woods that if you chop down, you have a fire. They know there's food growing. They can eat, probably. They can grow food. They can shoot animals, and they will be edible. Okay, Mars, none of this. Okay, there's absolutely no dependency. You're going to be reworking the psyche of the entire human thought process.
I've got this small idea that they might actually research what they're going to do before they go there, and they might have some smart people planning it all. They're not going to just send a load of hicks to Mars who have no skills. They're going to send people who are trained for it for years. They're going to send scientists up there who know how to, you know, deal with irrigation without rainfall, who know how to grow crops in an enclosed environment. And you can also send, like, we've got, the Mars rover, didn't NASA just send another
thing to Mars? Yeah, another one landed a couple of days ago.
Yeah, the other day. We can land them there. They can build the basis of a settlement
before we get there. You know, you misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not so much talking about the literal weather itself, but the fact the entire conditions of Mars are completely different to what humans have been used to for hundreds of thousands of years. Our evolutionary instinct is going to be flipped upside down, because we're going to be dealing with terrain and conditions that are not known even to our primal ancestors.
But then, is it that different when you think about it? Because, I mean, I think that, for me, the psychology bit is the one thing we know will stay consistent. Because imagine you've lived all your life in, I don't know, Kent. You grew up in Kent, some Neanderthal from Kent, and you've these lovely, lush, grassy fields, or whatever they have in Kent. And then, for some reason, you get teleported to some community in the Himalayas. You're going to feel like you're on Mars. Suddenly it's freezing, there's low altitude, you can't breathe properly in the higher places. They don't farm like you're used to.
It's basically Kent, to be honest.
The landscape's all weird and rocky. Like, I think humans have shown that they can adapt to enough situations that I don't think that Mars in itself will be a particular stretch of the human.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say
think this is
probably
one of the smaller problems.
No, I think significant. Long term, it's a bigger problem, because the whole dynamics of raising a family, of societal politics, are going to be different. And like I said in my summary earlier, say you've got Americans and Chinese there, how do they decide on how to be led?
I mean, it depends who led the mission.
That's true, but long term, so say they're establishing a permanent base there.
Yeah.
Several families down the line, okay, they've been given a degree of remote freedom. Okay, how do they decide who the liaison is and who's in charge and maintain the links with NASA? Do they vote? They choose who's
the
most worthy?
Well, I mean, anyone can, because it's not that far away.
It's
like a minute delay or something. You can just easily talk to someone.
That's 20 minutes, Mars.
turning them to live on Mars.
But someone with the most, but surely you want the sharpest, most intelligent people at the top.
Anyone
which
can.
What we have with our system.
I think that's an unimportant point. A more important point is, why would anyone want to live on Mars? Wouldn't it be easier
memes.
And cheaper to send people to colonize the bottom of the ocean and safer?
No, it wouldn't.
Do you know how expensive? Do you know what the cost is of getting £1 of something into space?
Yes, I do.
It's
$10,000. Is it $10,800 or something?
$10,000.
However, that
that's
will decrease
just into space.
It will decrease over time. It's into orbit, actually, not into space.
Yeah, the amount of cost and how stupidly dangerous it is. Because
so is going to the bottom of the ocean. To be fair,
this is a pretty extreme example. In Mars, there's
yeah.
no air
yeah.
like
yeah.
the bottom
point,
of the ocean. There's disgusting radiation which
yeah.
kills you.
Yeah.
Your body's slowly going to degenerate.
Yeah,
with the
1 second. House. Build a house. Like a building.
Yeah, no, but
to shield you from all this radiation and give you air.
If your pod breaks, you'd suffocate to death.
Yeah,
you're
okay,
slowly going to degenerate.
Make the pod unbreakable.
No, you have obviously you have fail safes, like you have like double layers,
no,
you have different compartments,
yeah, sure, sure.
airlocks.
You're slowly, your body's slowly gonna morph into the wrong shape because there's no gravity.
Yeah, it will be hard, but that's why you have smart people called scientists.
Yeah, but why?
Who come up with solutions like, oh, lift this weight every day.
It's insanely much easier. Like, the temperature fluctuations are insane. It'd be so much easier to send people to live in the Sahara Desert, make that habitable, or live underwater. It'd be infinitely easier and cheaper and safer and better to
no,
do all of those
you're
things.
Missing, you're missing the whole point of space exploration. Why
it's
do we need to go to the bottom of the ocean?
We don't. That's what I'm saying. We have other easier options.
Why do we need to go into space? So this is a valid question. So you two, now's the opportunity to answer. Why? What is the actual point of going into space?
And I thought for a moment there, we got the two people on the same side to fight each other.
Or I think as the host who's impartial and has no opinion, I think that we need to go into space just because
it's cool.
It's pretty damn cool, okay? Spaceships. Because I want Star Wars and Star Trek to be real, because that's cool. No. Because eventually, the population growth isn't an issue. You can say that. However, it won't be able to grow anymore. We won't be able to expand humanity's domain. We'll be limited at however many people can fit on Earth. If we can get to another planet, if we had that technology, we can expand infinitely, basically indefinitely. We say Earth gets hit by an asteroid, that won't be the end of our species if we've gone to space. If we go to space, the dinosaurs didn't go to
yeah,
space and they're all
the
extinct.
That's one good argument you have. Have you ever read Astro Stores?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah,
the blatant rip-off. No, wasn't there a rip-off of something else?
I don't think Astro Stores are great.
Astro Stores were good, yeah.
No, but
I saw you made note on quite a good point. So every time humans innovate in an under pressure situation, the innovations they make benefit the rest of society.
Yeah, NASA, the amount of stuff that NASA has done that has later, say, 10 years down the line, or even like 5 years down the line, become open to the public, become part of mainstream
yeah.
technology.
Maths. Can we have examples?
Such as, well,
I think Velcro.
Velcro was made by NASA.
The railways. They brought lots of good stuff to India.
No, I'm sure that's true, but wouldn't the same innovations happen and affect the general public?
Okay, 1 second. Infrared thermometers. Emergency blankets.
But couldn't all of this be done or be similar if the amount of money and infrastructure was spent on improving the Earth and making the Earth long-term survival?
The thing is here is, I think even if we make the Earth perfect, we should still be expanding outwards. I think humanity as a whole is, that's just kind of what we do.
There's,
I think it's in our psyche. We just expand
no
outwards.
No point living on a non-Earth planet.
Why?
Because it's just stupid.
If
have unmanned missions, sure. But that's fine. Unmanned missions to Mars, great.
So are you saying you don't want to explore the universe?
I want to go to an Earth-like planet that's 12 light years away. That's a 900-year trip. I checked the time. I've got something next Tuesday.
You better put on a
damn
wham playlist.
Yeah, like
get a few good audio books.
Yeah, bring a couple books.
Download the entire
it's
Dan Carlin
going to
that hardcore history. That
would be the type of exploration that humanity's basically never done before. Because you'll be so far away, there'll never be any contact with Earth again, ever, if you go to a planet that far away. And you don't know what's going to be there. You don't know if you can actually survive there. You're taking risks.
We did this 500 years ago when we sailed to the New World and stayed there.
However, sailing to the New World, you're still staying on the planet. As you said, Theo, it's essentially the same planet,
but,
the same
but for them, I'm going to go back on my point, for them, it's the same perception. So we take it for granted we know what's on the other side of the Atlantic. For them, they genuinely were not that sure.
Went. He went and said, "Oh, you don't actually die the second you step foot here." Then he went back and told other people. And other people went, "You can't do
and
that
colonies
with this
were
planet."
Frequently wiped out.
Yeah, but you can't do that with this planet because if you send a robot, it will take 900 years to get there and take 12 years for the information to get back.
Isn't the signal, the radio signal we sent out in 1974 to aliens to a certain galaxy, that's going to take like 12,000 years to get there? No, 25,000 years to get there, and then it'll take another 25,000
years
to receive a reply.
It's very unlikely that anyone receives.
Yeah, and in fact, that galaxy would have moved by the time the signal
yeah.
gets there.
But then there's the thing of, well, Mars solves that problem, because I think Mars is a 3-year trip or something.
Yeah.
The way the planets line up, you have to.
200 days,
some,
I think.
20 days?
200, I thought.
200 days.
That's
okay, so
pretty short, because wasn't the moon like.
A moon was a 3-day trip.
Yeah.
I don't know how long. I'm not 100% sure how long Mars was takes to get there. That shows how much research I've done for
this
podcast.
The Poorly Informed Podcast does science.
There we go. I'll get my opponent to Google it for me. Cheers, Peter. Call it a year there, a year back, or a year there, stay there for 10 years, a year back. You can have these trips within a human lifetime. These are similar to the kind of trips that people have done to and fro across the Atlantic during the when the 13 colonies existed, for instance. These are not unprecedented things. And the whole thing with space travel is we're not expecting to, okay, right now we're just going to this thing 12 light years away. You leapfrog your way from sort of one planet to the next, and each time you get a bit further, and then you can use that as a base to expand outwards. Because Earth's very expensive to lift resources off because we've got quite high gravity. Mars is smaller, less gravity, so it's easier to launch from there, cheaper to launch from there.
It's like starting to the hardest part, like dipping a toe into the pool. A cold swimming pool. Once you're in, you're fine.
We could, if technology advanced enough, we could build ships in space, and then you don't have the problem of trying to escape the gravity well of a planet if you're already in space.
What if you built a shipbuilding station on Mars? That would be quite something.
Yeah, with an orbit.
Or just
Mars.
One in orbit around the sun, and then and you can construct much larger vehicles like that because you're not limited by gravity.
Yeah.
Which is the fundamental, one of the major fundamental limitations of vehicles at the moment.
The nearest thing outside our solar system, nearest planet outside our solar system, is still 4.2 light years away, which is still 50 years, isn't it?
How do they decide where the solar system starts and ends?
What do you mean?
It's built around the sun, but then where's the sun. So is it galaxy?
Is it the heliopause? It's this sort of area of space that I don't think it's one of those things. It's like the boundary between Earth and the atmosphere and space. Is roughly, people say it's about 100 miles, but there's no like boundary. It just kind
of
gradually.
But in terms of the solar system itself, so you've got planets obviously orbit the sun. Then at what point? What's the next? How big is the distance between galaxies?
Well, it's pretty damn big.
Solar system's not galaxies.
No, not our solar system. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, it's 4.2 light years to the nearest other star.
So that would be.
That's a long time. That's 300 years.
Right. Is that the nearest one? Or
it is.
Is that the nearest one with planets?
Proxima to Centauri. Centauri.
Yeah.
That's
Centauri is the planet on it.
Far away. Yeah.
So you're saying
you're saying leapfrogging. Yeah, you can leapfrog in the solar system. Great. Then it's a very, very big frog you need to get from our solar system to another solar system.
But it's not impossible. And B, by the time you can harness the resources of an entire solar system,
You can't harness the resources of the solar system. There's one good thing in the solar system.
Peter, you've got some really good stuff here. I've stolen Peter's notes. Like, there's some really good statistics on here, and you just sort of ignored all of them.
But yeah. What are you saying about the distance? There's generation chips. That's kind of a pretty big trope in sci-fi. Things called generation chips. But that's quite a realistic way to overcome this issue of things being too far away. You just create a massive ship that's self-sustainable, that you can have a population on, that's big enough to remain biodiverse, or you can sort of, you know, sort of make sure that people only breed with certain people, which although there's moral and ethical issues behind that, you could have one that's big enough to remain culturally diverse, let's say like 4 or 5 generations on time, will land on the planet, and that's sort of the issue of being too far away.
Would you want a cruise ship your entire life?
do like a Wall-E situation where you live on the ship. Yeah, probably. It'd be pretty cool.
No, it'd be bad.
I also don't want to live in a planet where every square kilometre there's just houses and concrete.
But it wouldn't be that bad. There aren't houses and concrete.
But the population will continue to increase. It may this rate of increase may decrease. It will still increase.
Max, you're a host. I'm biased.
The host is never unbiased on the show. What are you on about? We are consistently proud of the fact that we are in no way neutral.
I drew a picture of some astronauts standing on Mars saying, this sucks.
So that'll be on Twitter later, by the way.
You said you're bored of Mars. Like, you'd get bored on Mars.
Well,
you're
yes.
such a boring person, because Peter. Oh my god.
Man, I'm sure, like, looking out at this one red view I can see because I can't go anywhere else because I die. No, let's say this tiny little...
I'm still not convinced why we need to go to space. Okay, I've heard, it's cool.
Thank you, Theo.
It's cool. Right, no, it's awesome rocket, but that was coming from Peter. Like, you guys still haven't convinced me.
Right, why did we go to the Arctic?
It's cool.
Hey, that was terrible. We're cutting that.
we are not cutting that.
best joke ever.
Why? Because we wanted to see what was there.
Exactly. It's scientific discovery. We go to Mars, we will discover more.
The first people who go to Mars will be the military and scientists. There'll be a mixture of test pilots and scientists, as NASA often sort of their crews often are. Then after that, you start to get some more general purpose scientists. You start to get sort of specialist scientists who will be going in to look at certain things, and you get a mixture of them. And gradually over time, you'll get less and less sort of professional, as it were.
You have to send a journalist up at one point.
Well, you'll get the thing, like, you know, there was that the teacher who was going to go up in the space shuttle.
Yeah.
I mean, it did explode, so maybe
yeah,
we'll did talk about that. But that kind of thing where you spread out, you get sort of involve more people in it, and eventually over time, as this thing organically grows, it turns from this core military mission that's just gone to explore and to research to a larger kind of general population now, because you have people that need to do the cleaning and people that need to do all this and that, and naturally you'll get an expansion.
Immigrant workers doing all the cleaning.
Pretty sure everyone in space would be an immigrant.
Yeah, that's true actually. You'd have, but then, you know,
there'd be no racism if you go to space.
I think that's wishful thinking.
Yeah. Another question I have is, so you have people going to space, of course you have people going to space, that's the whole point of this topic.
Like, the one good reason I can see for going to space is one you've already mentioned, which is avoiding the apocalypse that will eventually come.
Why not just avoid the apocalypse?
Because it's hard to avoid an asteroid. It's hard to dodge.
Yeah.
Can't sidestep it.
It was 50 million years ago.
But, I mean...
Yeah, there's Yellowstone.
Yeah,
the volcano that's overdue and erupting, and that would probably kill most of us.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
We'll probably wipe ourselves out in nuclear wars at some point.
Exactly.
Well, why wouldn't we do that if we went to space?
Because
humanity's
more spread out. You can't have an extinction event if
you... Yeah,
you
can't send a nuke 12 light years away.
So say you've got a human base on Mars.
Watch us try.
Yeah.
Will they end up being... Say you're getting to a base of several thousand now. Probably. Let's say you hit the million mark.
Okay.
Is this now... How do they follow Earth laws? They follow American laws? They follow Chinese laws or Russian laws? They have their own. So I know there's treaties in the space. I know that. But this is a separate cause. Okay, this is a separate. They have their own. Do they now feel, okay, there's a million of us. We now get to set the laws.
I mean, if you look at America, obviously there's taxes and issues, but taxes and stuff causing the American Revolution. But so they got to the point where they're like, we don't want to be ruled by someone else who's all the way over there. Let's rule ourselves. They had a revolution. Now they're separate in their own country. Obviously, we don't want a revolution of Mars, but something like that would happen where it gets made independent, which is probably bound to happen. Or we have one human government with sort of a state system, with America and Earth being different states, kind of thing. But I don't
America and Earth being different states.
America!
Yeah, separate. Okay, with Mars and Earth being separate. So yeah, I think it would very much be something where it would just kind of happen, where obviously when it's just a small society, before you have people living there because they're born there, when you have people who were just sent there to do stuff, when they're sent there to do stuff, they'll probably follow NASA law, as opposed to sort of a...
So you'd have to have, like, lawyers genuinely at NASA drafting laws and regulations for what humans can and can't do in space.
I suppose they already have them, because you've got... what are the laws on the ISS?
There's an international treaty... My tiny bit of research on Wikipedia, there's an international treaty, I think, ratified by a surprisingly high amount of countries. There's a Moon Treaty, which is disputed. I think that's what sets the terms of the ISS. But also on the ISS, they're all scientists, test pilots, astronauts, who their main aim is to collect scientific data. When you get enough people going to Mars, they will have their own interests and their own aims, so it's not so easy to control them. So I think you're right, maybe that would be a revolution on Mars. Okay,
interestingly with the ISS is they each follow their own country's laws.
Oh, right.
And of course, there's a liability for all damages waived, damage to their body included, so there's that. But I think it's one of those things of, we have done this before with the 13 colonies, and while it could be rocky, people can die, we might have Mars versus Earth war. Ooh. Like, which doesn't sound great, but these kind of things are probably likely to happen. Like, as it's expanding, there's going to be problems, but at the same time, we survived it the first time, we've been here before, we now know what we can expect, so I'd say we're probably better set up for expanding now than we were back in the 1600s. So I think the ability of humanity to cope with the expansion without everyone dying because they all went to war with each other is probably pretty high, and I think it's not going to be a massive problem if something like this
also,
does happen.
You don't need that many people on Mars because it's still an awful place to live. Like, say, okay, sure, you don't need a city of a million
but you're
people.
Saying expanding into space is cool, so why wouldn't people go if it becomes easy?
Say there's like 20,000 people on Mars.
Okay,
I think that's
yeah.
a reasonable upper limit. You've got enough engineers, you've got enough people to build the ships that we then send out because it's easier, less gravity.
Yeah.
I would say you won't need any more than that. And with essentially a city-state, such a small amount of space that's colonised, they can easily follow terrestrial laws because it's a 20-minute conversation
yeah.
away. And I don't think Mars will ever be self-sufficient, or it would be a struggle for it to be self-sufficient.
With foreplanning, because if you're going to Mars...
Minerals I don't think you can get from Mars.
But at the same time, what if they have the leverage with Earth? They can provide things that we maybe are struggling to get our hands
like,
on. I don't know enough about them.
Like, coal, nickel and stuff. Not coal. Copper and nickel, which will eventually start to
run out of. If they can have enough... I think this wouldn't happen with 20,000 people, but maybe with a million. A million it wouldn't. But at the point where maybe we've now managed to inhabit most of the planet and there are... this sort of one unit, it might have economic leverage that's high enough to be able to compete with Earth to some degree, which would, I think, mean it would have to be at some point have its own independence, because once it has the economic leverage, now we have two planets in an economy, and if one has that much power, it's going to have to like do its own thing. It won't let itself be restrained.
And even like, you're talking about size and how there won't be a big enough population on Mars. Why wouldn't there be? If you're building, let's say, just biodomes, because we're not going to be able to terraform Mars, probably. So you've got these big biodomes. You can just build another one and expand your society into that one and build another one. And then you have kind of a utopia. I'm not going to say it's not really a utopia, because there will be issues. But you have a society that can feed itself. It will never grow past the point of being able to feed itself, because things will be controlled in it. You can have areas which are sort of designated green spaces. You can have a green space biodome.
But then, because humans are flawed, another set of problems will come up anyway.
Yeah,
Mars specific.
You can
and
say
then,
that staying on Earth, though.
Well, yeah, of course, but one day on Mars, they'll say, right, let's move to a new place. So it's not, we can't think of it as a utopia.
No, that's why I try to avoid
yeah,
using the word utopia. I'm just not very good at English. Let's do one final summary. Has anyone changed their mind? Will, still for?
I am still for, absolutely.
Peter, are you still against, like a stupid person?
I'm actually secretly for, because space is awesome and
exactly.
I get to make a very good argument. And I, yeah.
Okay, Theo, have you changed your opinion?
I can see for. I think you guys are being a bit unimaginative about the philosophical and moral problems we're going to face. So I can empathise with four more now, but I'm probably slightly more against.
So my arguing was so good, I persuaded Theo onto my side.
Yeah,
no,
but he's very
no,
susceptible
no,
to...
Because their arguments were flawed.
But I was going to point out that I think Theo may well be right with his arguments, but I don't think humans will care anyway, so it
yeah.
might be irrelevant.
Plus, get stuffed! Plus, any issues that Theo was talking about how there'll be other problems that will come up, such as, you know, moral and philosophical issues. There'll still be that if we stay on Earth and have a massive population. But anyway, as the impartial host that I am, I think that the Foreside won it, because that's the one I'm on.
And if you disagree, then you can get in touch with us on our I'm getting good at these. You can get in touch with us on our Twitter page, at Podcast Poorly. We often put photos on there of our recordings, and we'll let you know beforehand what's going on. Get in touch with us there, comment or message us on there, or email us if you've got more complex ideas, feedback, suggestions, comments there. That is poorlyinformeddiscussion@gmail.com. It's also in the description, I would say below, but this is an audio recording, so it's in the description. So please do get in touch with us there. We are always looking, well, I'm always looking for feedback. The other three don't care a huge amount, but that's fine.
Okay, yep. Thank you very much for listening. We hope this has been somewhat interesting and not incredibly confusing. We hope you tune in for the next one, and goodbye.
What is the next one?
We'll work it out.
Okay. Yeah, it'll be
fine.
Good night.
Bye.
See you later, alligators.
Hop. You, like, hop your way across. What's the word?
Leapfrog?
Leapfrog. That's it. I was thinking of frogs and then said hop.